Hello, everyone, and welcome to Breaking Muscle Radio. You have your hosts here, Chet, myself, and Becca.
Hello, everybody.
So, for those of you that have found us through iTunes or Stitcher, you can find the show notes on our website, which is breakingmuscle.com. And there it includes a breakdown of all the topics as well. So you can fast forward to the bits that interest you or even rewind to the parts that you want to listen to again. And for those of you who are Breaking Muscle regulars, we wanted to tell you about some aspects of Breaking Muscle you may not be aware of. So a couple of things are Breaking Muscle UK, our sister site, which you can find at www.breakingmuscle.co.uk, and also our forums, which you can find directly off the main site. And within the forums, there's a ton of our coaches there answering questions, putting up training logs, loads and loads of interesting stuff.
Yeah, so a lot of you send us emails asking questions, and some of you may have noticed I've been directing you to the forums lately. So if you have any questions, the best place to go is the forums. We have literally dozens of coaches in there, from yoga experts to nutrition experts to hypertrophy to physical therapists, and they are there specifically to answer your questions, including our guest today, John Russin, and he's also been sharing his hypertrophy and fat loss program. And we have some other exciting things that we're going to talk to John about, too. Maybe you can hint at that, Chet.
Yep, definitely. John and Callie Youngstrom will be releasing a hypertrophy and fat loss program and answering all your questions in the forum as well. So that's an absolutely unique opportunity there. And we also recorded some bonus questions with John as well. You can access those along with a whole load of choice articles from the archives delivered directly to your inbox, and all you have to do is subscribe to the weekly newsletter. It's called 12 Reps, and the way to get there is just hit the subscribe button at the top of the website, or there's a box at the bottom of breakingmuscle.com as well. And lastly, just before we get to speak to Dr. John, we've got another fantastic guest lined up for you next month, Artemis Skantalides. She has a phenomenal background, actually, a former ballet dancer, turned kung fu black belt. She's now a kettlebell expert, and let me just mention that she's one of the few women in the world to complete the Iron Maiden Challenge. A little sneak preview. If you're not sure what that is, I'm sure you'll find out when we chat to her.
All right, so without further ado, let's get to this week's guest. Here we are with Dr. John Russin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Breaking Muscle Radio. I'm here today along with my co-host, Chet. Say hello, Chet.
Hello, this is Chet Mojaria.
All right, so our guest today is a physical therapist, but he's not one of the physical therapists who's going to tell you not to work too hard at the gym. In fact, he's worked with a lot of hardcore athletes, from NFL and Major League Baseball players to Olympians to powerlifters to bodybuilders. Hard work in the gym is not something his clients avoid, but they do avoid pain and injury, and our guest helps them do that. His name is Dr. John Russin, and in his practice, he integrates hypertrophy, strength, self-myofascial release techniques, and physical therapy to help his clients reach new heights in performance. You may have also seen his articles along these lines on our website. So welcome to our show today, John.
Hey, Becca and Chet. Great to be here. Thank you.
Hey, John.
Yeah.
So, John, I'd love to start with an idea that Becca mentioned. So this idea that you can combine high performance with essentially a pain-free training methodology. And I guess some of our listeners will see this as like the ultimate pairing, and others might think there's no way that's possible, that it's completely unattainable. So how exactly do you pair high performance with consistent pain-free training?
Well, that's a loaded question, but it is actually something that I, along with all of my clients, do on a daily basis. So breaking it down a little bit further, my background is actually in high-performance training first before I actually went into physical therapy later on. So through the practice of both of those niches, I kind of brought them together and synergized them to kind of create this model where, yes, we can get results in hypertrophy or strength or whatever your training goals are, but we can do it in an intelligently designed program where we can actually do so in a pain-free manner.
Nice. So along similar lines, I know a lot of people separate aesthetic training and performance training into two very different things. But looking at your articles and your programming and what you do, it seems like you blur that line, that you don't necessarily separate those two. Do you think that someone can train for both aesthetics and performance at the same time?
Absolutely they can, and I really think that people should be shifting their goals to try to tackle both of these things at once. And, you know, it's not two different camps of thought. Really, at the ultimate optimal performance, it's really human performance above all else. You know, taking the best from all practices and niching them together to create something that's more individual and set up for a person's goals, as opposed to really just having a camp of thought and just adhering to every single thing, even if it doesn't match your exact body, your goals, and your training methods and your ability to do so with goals in mind.
So I guess that's part of the learning process for someone is figuring out how to do that for themselves, right?
Absolutely. Everyone's an individual. You can't just sign online anymore and see a random article and take it for granted, because every single thing has to be about your body. It has to be about your individual function. And above else, it has to be matched with your current level of function. And really, that's the big disconnect, is there can never be a one-size-fits-all, because every single person, even every single NFL football player at the same position, not everyone's going to present the same way. And they're certainly not going to present the same way on a daily basis. So this is a continuum that we need to consistently think about.
So talking about the NFL players that you work with, different types of baseball athletes, gold medal Olympians, powerlifters, bodybuilders, different types of individuals, effectively, who are the hardest athletes you find to work with, and why?
So I would say the high-performance Olympic athletes are the hardest ones to work with, but not because of what you traditionally think. Some of the highest level athletes in the world are physical freaks of nature that have been bred to do these things and win gold medals on the biggest stage in the world every 4 years. And sometimes as a coach, as a therapist, as a strength and conditioning coordinator, we sometimes need to step back to step forward a couple more steps. And it's hard because we study, we know so much, and with our field evolving at the rate that it is currently, sometimes stepping back and doing less can actually produce better results for some of these high-performance athletes. You know, a quote that I always will remember from one of my mentors early on in my career when working with the NFL and MLB guys in their off seasons was, you have three jobs as a strength coach. One, make sure your athletes do not get hurt. That was number one. Number two, make sure your athletes don't get fat. Okay, simple enough. And number three, make sure your athletes don't get arrested.
So at that point,
I knew I could do all three of those things and maybe a little bit above and beyond those three. So sometimes the simplest things can really just go above and beyond, especially with these high-performance athletes at the elite levels.
It's interesting, though. I think that applies to a lot of our readers, too, taking a step back, because I think you know, all of us on the staff and a lot of people who come to our site are very type A driven, you know, weekend warrior, you know, marathon runners, like people who enjoy taking more on and maybe aren't so good about taking breaks and recovery. So in that way, it seems like those Olympians might not be so different.
Oh, they're not different at all. And, you know, when I look at my favorite clients overall to work with, it is those weekend warriors. It is those workout warriors that have the drive and the passion to be better, and they want to know about their body. They want to know what it's capable of doing, because they truly have that drive that sometimes you can't teach. And you can really hone those people's programs and their skills and really get a good influence on them where they can do great things, even if those things are taking a step back every once in a while and seeing what's really working and what things need to be prioritized in a program.
Absolutely. And in your programming, you mention a way to do this. You mention getting the athlete to learn themselves about what listening to their body really means and reacting to that through RPE, the rate of perceived exertion scale. Can you explain a little bit more to the listeners about what that is?
So RPE can basically be described as how hard a set, how hard a rep feels to you on a given day. So this isn't an RPE scale for the month. This is an RPE scale for every single set in your training program. So the rate of perceived exertion is really based on what you feel and how you're going to get the most out of what you can possibly do on a daily basis without overdoing yourself. Because there are a lot of variables when it comes to heavy loading schemes. There's a lot of variables when it comes to metabolic conditioning, and we need to take all those variables into account. So that being said, RPE is not a built-in excuse for people not to progressively challenge themselves in their training or on the field. This is just another tool for people to think about when they become more advanced with your training. So would I use RPE for a novice athlete in the weight room? Probably not. You know, we need to be pushing the limits little by little. We need to be using progressive overload. We need to be tapping into those neuromuscular recruitment patterns. And we don't quite need the ability to see how it feels yet, because like anything else, feeling something is much different than having a nominal or ordinal scale saying that you need to do X amount of reps, X amount of sets at X load. The feel comes with time. The feel comes with practice. And the feel comes with mastery of your body. And that doesn't happen overnight. So RPE is for a special person, and it's also for a type of personality that can take it without really taking it too easy in the gym.
Right. It's an acquired skill, right?
Absolutely.
So if there's people listening to this and they've been training for a while, they like what you're saying about RPE, and they're currently working off a traditional percentage-based program, how do they start to make the shift to using the RPE scale and really tuning into their bodies?
So if you're going off a percentage-based program, you're going to have a pretty good idea what a percentage feels like to your body. You're going to have an idea of the kind of activation that you get through each percentage, but also the way that it shifts your metabolic system at the end of each set. So taking into account all of that, test it out for a couple weeks. Test out your RPEs, and it's as simple as writing down. It depends what scale you're looking at, either 1 to 10, 1 being as easy as it possibly could be, 10 being horrible, like you might have to go to the emergency after. Or you could really use the 1 to 20, which is more the medical-based model of RPE, where you're really thinking about your exertion on every set. So when we're talking about a 10, that means that literally you could not move another inch. You are going to be laying on the ground for at least 8 minutes, and you are going to probably be making a trip to the bathroom and hold your head over the toilet. So that's truly what a 10 is. Not many people are mentally or physically capable of pushing themselves to that limit. You know, people that I think of that are, you know, professional bodybuilders, power lifters, and obviously the CrossFit athletes. They're able to mentally make that shift where they can get it up to that 10. That's not what we're talking about when we're training in the gym for, you know, those 99 percenters out there. What we're talking about is getting where you can feel what your body's capable of doing. So use this as just a test run for a couple weeks. Write down, how did every set feel? Just put a number next to it. This set was 6. This set was 8. And then after a couple weeks doing the same type of programming, we can look back at it, and we have a lot of data to go through. We have a lot of data to sort and see where we could potentially be either upping our loading schemes with additional weight, or where we can really be honing in our activation or our tension or our the rhythm that we're using in each movement to really up that RPE. So RPE is all not about adding more weight to the bar and making things feel harder. There's a lot of different complexities that go into it to make something harder.
So I have a question, because say I didn't get much sleep last night, my RPE, my experience of the same weight on the bar might be different depending on how I slept, what I ate for dinner, how I've treated myself. Is that a benefit or a fault when it comes to using RPE as a training tool?
You know, it's a double-edged sword. So, I mean, it's no great shock to people. If you got 2 hours of sleep, you're not going to be performing very well. Or, you know, if you ate like absolute shit the day before and you're all swelled up and you literally can't move more than 5 minutes in the gym without having to go to the bathroom, that's probably not going to be your best day to to look at your RPE. So we have to take into account setting that baseline, like I said, for a couple weeks and really looking at your body and looking at the variables with each of your training sessions and really realistically looking at what you're able to do when everything, when all the other variables are close to perfect. Because when you can do that, then things like sleep, things like nutrition, things like stress, we can all take a look at what our baseline is. So by setting that metric of what you're able to do in those first couple of weeks, just tracking what you're feeling like, all of a sudden when you actually go to use RPE to guide your training session, you're going to have a baseline to look at. You can't just start this out and it's going to be impossible to just to start out throwing numbers out there because like anything else, you have to master what your body feels like.
So I'd like to move to a different topic. Still talking about what people do in the gym, and you've written a lot about the warm-up, in particular in your article, Shredtelligent Design, and we can include that link in the show notes for anyone that's listening. And in that, you write about the importance of a dynamic warm-up and ramp-up sets, in particular when it comes to how strength athletes should warm up. So could you just explain a little bit more, please, about the purposes of the warm-up for a strength athlete?
Absolutely. So warming up has become popular in pretty much all facets of fitness and athletics. You know, the last 20 years, it's really gained popularity. But the way I look at the general warm-up is within three different categories. The first category is your pre-training routine. So this is the stuff that you do before you actually get into your program design. So things like, you know, full body foam rolling, some light stretching. Whatever happens before your dynamic warm-up is considered your pre-training. You know, from there, we go into a specific dynamic warm-up that should be matched to your training emphasis on that day. And then after that, after the dynamic warm-up is complete, you have movement-specific warm-ups, which are also called ramp-up sets. So I thought this was something that everyone naturally did, but I was wrong because we've written a bunch about the subject of ramp-up sets, and it seemed to be like people were like, wow, this guy is reinventing the wheel with this ramp-up scheming. And in reality, everyone's been naturally doing this for a long, long time. You know, even the gym bros, they get into, you know, the big commercial gym, they throw a couple reps up with the bar on the bench press, they throw those 25 plates on, a couple more reps, throw on the 45s, and then they get up all the way until they work up into their working sets. You know, this is naturally what even, you know, some of the most ignorant people in fitness are doing naturally. So just putting a more focused effort in ramping up yields huge benefits when we look at performance, but also health.
So some of the people asking questions about the ramp-up sets are actually people following the program that you have on our site. So can you, which we'll also link for the people listening, can you tell us a little bit about the program that's going on right now and you're answering questions in the forums for people and everything?
Yeah, so we have on Forum 46, which is the coaches' forum on breaking muscle, we have the specific hypertrophy training program that has six phases. So each phase is 2 weeks long, but these are custom-built training sessions that are 4 days a week and are literally some of the best program designs that I've personally ever written. And we're given this stuff for absolutely free out on the forums right now. Not only that, not only do you have specific set rep schemes, but I'll be answering anyone's questions that they have about this specific program right on the forum where they're posted. So literally it's like having your own online coach right in the forum. So any questions that people have, we can get them straight. Even if it's down to, hey, I have problems with this movement, we can give modifications. We can talk about nutritional guidelines. Really, it's an open-ended question and answer session over on the forums pertaining to that hypertrophy program.
Awesome, awesome. Yeah, I highly encourage anyone who's interested in kind of learning this approach or who hasn't tried this kind of approach before to get in there and give it a shot and pick John's brain in there while you're at it.
Yeah, and for the listeners out there, don't be scared away by the word hypertrophy. Pretty much what we're looking at is looking better, feeling better, and obviously functioning better. You know, we're not going to be doing the Arnold Schwarzenegger 10x10 scheme for every body part and training twice a day. But what we are going to be doing is putting in intelligent design programs that are going to keep you healthy while you chase down your aesthetics goal, whether it be gaining a little bit of muscle, but also this program can be twofold. We can use it for fat loss as well. I've used a program very similar to the one that I released on the forums for myself, and I've actually cut down on my percentage of body fat personally and have done so with a bunch of clients. So really it's all about matching this training program to specific nutritional requirements, but this is all stuff that we can cover right in the forums.
That is really cool, John. It's amazing that, you know, not only do they have this program, but you're there on hand to answer questions as well. That's really cool. Just talking about gaining fat and losing muscle as you were there, how would you treat the age-old conundrum if a client who comes to you and says they want to gain muscle and lose fat at the same time? Like, what's, you know, how do you reply to that?
That's a tough question, but the answer is one that not a lot of people want to hear. The answer is that you have to have a goal for your training, not 6 weeks away, not 6 months away, not even 6 years away. How about 6 decades worth of training? So our goal for training is to be doing this for the long term. You know, my personal goal for my training every single morning is that I want to be doing that for an hour to an hour and a half a day, every single day for the rest of my life. I want to be doing this at 70 years old. I want to be doing it at 90 years old. I want to have that drive to be better, but also to treat my body correctly so it can take care of me for the long run. And when it pertains to fat loss along with hypertrophy, this can be done, but it's a slow process. You know, Americana, our society, just wants everything right now. They want it within 4 workout sessions or they throw it away. You know, it has to be viewed as the continuum of a lifelong journey in fitness. If you have that mindset, it makes every single training session, every single meal, goal-oriented, where we can really move into achieving things that are, quote-unquote, unachievable. So losing fat and gaining muscle, those are two polar opposite things. But when you treat your body correctly, when you treat it correctly for a long-term basis, these things are possible.
So I think your experience as a physical therapist gives you a different perspective than a lot of coaches as far as how to care for the body and how to move properly. What you said you began in high performance. So what drove you to become a physical therapist, and how do you think that informs your coaching?
It's a funny story. People always laugh when they hear kind of my movement from strength and conditioning all the way into physical therapy. So I grew up as an athlete, as do most coaches and therapists, and I had the chance to really learn from my own household at an early age because both my parents were university professors. My dad was later an athletic director of a high school district. And my mom continued on in the research realm and also did a lot of grant work. And having those two role models in my life, you know, from birth, really gave me the idea that I was going to do something within this field. So having baseball guiding my undergrad, you know, I played Division I baseball, and I was training hard, and I was training intelligently because I was set up with a lot of really great coaches, you know, probably from age 15 on throughout my career. And I made some great connections, but I was lucky enough to have these coaches that weren't just going to put me through workouts, but they were going to educate me between every set. You know, shoot, you got 30 to 60 seconds between every set sometimes. A lot can be learned, especially if you're doing that 5 days a week for the next 4 years. So I was really able to take a lot of that information, and this is in the day before, you know, looking at the entire body as a unit was the cool thing to do. This is before the functional training phenomenon. This was before all of that happened. And really that led me into, you know, going through an exercise science undergrad curriculum, gaining my CSCS, and then moving into the collegiate strength and conditioning sector. So that lasted about 3 months or so. And my parents both told me, hey, I think you should go back to school and get some more coursework under your belt. So at the time, I was happy. I was happy as a strength coach, man. I was working with basketball. I was working with a rowing team. You know, I was moving into football. I loved it. I was able to train myself. I was able to be around people that thought like me. I mean, this was my be-all, end-all job. I'd be happy to this day if I was sitting in a collegiate strength and conditioning center. But parents being parents and me being very trusting of their influence, I ended up going, okay, so what am I going to do? So my options were, all right, go to a master's degree in exercise science, or, oh, there's this new thing, doctor of physical therapy. It would be kind of cool to be a doctor like my parents, right?
Hmm.
You know, throw the DR in front of your name. That's always a great thing. So
totally.
I ended up signing right up for that, getting into school. And I was lucky enough to have very good grades. So I made it into school, which is a problem for a lot of people these days because, you know, it's brutally tough to get into some of these DPT programs. That's a different story. But going through the DPT curriculum, the only thing I had in my mind for 3.5 years was, how am I going to get back into strength and conditioning? You know, it seems crazy. But I was sitting through coursework in neuromuscular rehabilitation, musculoskeletal, biomechanics, you know, cardiorespiratory. And my only thought was, how am I going to use this information to move back into that sector of strength and conditioning and high performance? So... You know, I was probably very annoying to my classmates and to my parents and to all my friends for about a 3-year period, just talking about somewhere where I've already been. That's where I wanted to go back to. It was like Groundhog Day. But
right.
At the end of it, I remember sitting in a residency in the hospital. You know, I was still in orthopedic. We were working with orthopedic rehab. And I remember thinking to myself, man, I cannot get stuck within this system. I got to make a move. I got to do something. So at that point, I sent resumes out to every center in the country that was doing multidisciplinary work. So, you know, look back about a decade ago, there wasn't a lot of places that were doing physical therapy, chiropractic, personal training, strength and conditioning, massage therapy, nutrition, all within the same house. So it really broke it down to about, I think it was about 55 centers. So I emailed all 55 centers, and I got about 10 responses from people. From those 10 responses, I went through, and I got the opportunity to come in, not even get hired, but go into a residency out in Southern California. And at that point, I went with a backpack. I moved all by myself, didn't know one person there, and ended up working a dual role as a strength and conditioning coach and also a high-performance physical therapist in a residency, and then taking my first job out there. So I guess... you know, that transition has always, it wasn't really a transition. It's always been there. But it was always that mindset of, you know, putting things into perspective of how you're going to use it in your future. You know, many people struggle with where they want to be. That wasn't something that I personally struggled with. I knew where I wanted to go. But it was not an easy path. You know, people ask me all the time, like, oh, man, how do you bridge the gap between both of these things? And it's a tough question to answer because, you really have to sacrifice a lot, and you have to go through a lot and go the other way while the masses are, you know, going against you and trying to create something that really isn't mainstreamed yet. So it's a little bit of the background, probably a little bit more than you wanted to hear on it.
No, that was good. That was really good to hear.
Not at all. Yeah, that's a really cool story. And I think, like, I pulled a few kind of themes. So, like, the value of experience, and you were just talking there about the struggle with perspective and the struggle with kind of bridging gaps as well. And just changing the topic a little bit, but still along those themes, I think a lot of our listeners probably, I know I do, have an issue with perspective when it comes to training and injury and how to kind of bridge the gap between, you know, what happens when you're injured, how do you actually train around that if you should at all. And in your article, 5 Steps to Safely Train Around Lower Back Pain, and again, we'll put the link in the show notes, it did surprise me, I have to say, to read that you believe that back injuries are the price of doing business if you're training at the right intensity. And just to pull another quote from it, you say that it's just a matter of time until the iron takes you as its name. So just to clarify that, are you saying that if you're a veteran of the iron game, that a back injury is as good as unpreventable?
Yeah, this is another thing that not a lot of people want to hear, but it's something that needs to be said, and I think I'm the right guy to say it because, you know, we do lift heavy, but we also sit in that rehab setting as well. You know, the statistics on lower back pain and dysfunction, especially in the westernized countries, they just do not lie. So you cannot argue with those statistics that are saying nearly every single person over their lifetime will suffer a lower back debilitating injury, you know, whether they're training or not. So you throw training on top of this, and you really have something that could be potentially debilitating for the long run. And, you know, the question is, you know, how did we get this way as a culture? You know, we seem to be getting people more in the outliers of our physical culture, so highly obese or highly fit, and not a lot in between. But really the biggest commonality between these two groups and then that middle group are three different things. Posture is huge. Posture is the biggest equalizer in our current day society from a physical means. Also, for the people that are training, their training ratios are just not proper. Their training ratios are off. And then finally, for a majority of people out there, there's just poor execution of foundational movements, either in the gym or whatever they're doing in their daily lives. So foundational movement patterns have nothing to do with gym-specific movement. What they have to do with is something that people have to do on a daily basis for the rest of their lives in order to stay healthy, whether they're training or not.
So how does someone that's listening to this go about improving those daily functional movement patterns?
Hey, this is an easy one. For as complex as this problem is, the key is much easier to righting the ship. I mean, if you look at our deterioration of posture as a Western society, man, put down your cell phone. Stand up from your desk. Walk around a little bit. You know, get off your tablet. Have a conversation with somebody. You know, you don't have to be on your iPhone 24/7. You know, it might do you some social good as well. But also, you know, you look at just being confined to a majority of our working class are confined to desks. So desk jobs scare the shit out of me because sitting 8 to 10 hours a day has become the orthopedic epidemic that, you know, gets vilified in deadlifting or something like that. You know, the number of injuries secondary to sitting is far beyond the number of injuries that are ever sustained in the gym setting. So that's the first thing. You know, second thing, if you're already training, put an emphasis on your training ratio. So what I mean by that is your pull to push ratios. So thinking about a pull, something like a deadlift pattern, a push, something like a bench press. So for the average human being on the face of the earth that is going to go and train, you can stay around a 2-to-1 pull-to-push ratio and have some really good success with it. You know, the reason that we want to sit in that ratio at a 2-to-1 setting is that all of those postural stresses that we just talked about need to be undone in some sort of way, and doing it through loaded progressive strength and conditioning can do so. You know, there's certain niches out there in the fitness population that are going to go closer to a 1-to-1. You know, the kind of people that are going to make, you know, $1 million a year if they can get, you know, their trap thickness up by a quarter of an inch. You know, that's not most of us. That's what I like to call one percenters.
Yeah.
A lot of my writing is geared towards not the one percenters. The one percenters are fine. They're going to be fine. We're talking about the vast majority of people that are looking not to run around in an NFL field on Sundays, but to just feel good on a daily basis, look good, not suffer from disease later on in life, and just have a good pain-free life, you know, plain and simple. So looking at those training ratios is big, but then obviously poor execution of movement. Our society has thought, okay, a squat is a squat only with a barbell, only with the barbell on your back, and you must throw at least a big plate on each side in order to do a squat movement. You know, that's not the reality of things.
Hmm.
We need to be more intelligent in the way that we pick our variations of movement. you know, a squat is a foundational movement pattern, a fundamental movement pattern that every single person should do. You know, you talk about the elderly. You talk about the pediatric population. Everyone should be squatting to some measure. And whether that's with 400 pounds on your back with a barbell is one thing, but everyone needs to be practicing components of this movement as opposed to not practicing it at all because you can't, you know, get that barbell in a comfortable position. You can't use that barbell without hurting yourself. You know, there's nothing wrong with barbell training. You know, a couple of my articles speak to, oh, the most debilitating exercises on earth. Sometimes the most debilitating exercises also have the highest ceiling when they're executed properly for a training effect. So it's all individualistic, like we said in the beginning of this podcast. It needs to be individual to your body, the way that you're feeling, and the way that you're functioning.
So one of the tools that I've seen you advocate for helping people move better, helping people perform better, is hands-on self-myofascial release techniques. Can you explain a bit about this? Because I've done foam rolling and, you know, messed around with lacrosse balls and things like that, but I've never done hands-on work on myself. So can you tell our listeners a bit about that?
Yeah, so hands-on SMR is just like it says. We're literally going to be using our own hands to manipulate our own tissues for self-myofascial release. So by using our own hands, there's a couple different advantages that it has over the traditional SMR, like foam rolling or stick work or the lacrosse ball. So advanced hands-on SMR techniques provide the ability to treat acute soft tissue dysfunction. So let's take the foam roller and compare it to the fingertip of your thumb. You know, those are two different levels of surface area that we're talking about. So if you're looking at the circumference of a foam roller compared to your finger is more acute and is able to hit more acute structures with efficacy. So, you know, getting a foam roller over something like your internal and external rotator cuff tendons, it's just not going to happen. The structures are too small in order to get good tension on and get some good work when it comes to SMR. So using your fingers to have an acute soft tissue that is smaller in nature really works well. Also, accessing deep tissues for a concentrated treatment is really advantageous for hands-on SMR over the foam roller. The foam roller is a great tool for doing superficial, large tissues, you know, thinking of something like your quads. But when you get down to hands-on SMR, it's really built for finding that one little thing, that one linchpin of dysfunction, that one linchpin of tightness that's holding you back, finding it and treating it with a fine comb. And also, you know, this is the best thing about hands-on SMR, is its dual-loop feedback system. So I'm also a soft tissue practitioner, along with doing my practice in strength and conditioning. So I do treat people in person from more of a physical therapy setting, an orthopedic manual physical therapy. But even the best practitioner in the world, the best physical therapist in the world, the best chiropractor in the world, they cannot feel what you can physically feel when you work on yourself. This is due to something called a dual loop feedback system. So you're getting not only sensory from your fingertips, feeling your tissues, how they feel, but also you're getting sensory from the opposite end of the equation with your body having proprioception over those tissues as well. So this is a highly rich sensory environment that you can really feel things that even the best doctors in the world would dream that they could feel when they were working on their patients. And above all else, it's self-sufficient. You know, we all hate getting that same physical therapy and having to go in for 4 days a week for the next 3 months, and who knows what's going to happen at the end of it. So having self-sufficiency in your own treatment is big. Having the ability to literally treat yourself is huge, not only from a time perspective, but from a capital perspective, but also just taking care of stuff and not depending on somebody else to do things for you. You know, that's a very powerful thing in life, not only in fitness, but in life. You know, if every time you squat in the squat rack, you have to have, you know, a CSCS looking at your movement, that's not going to be feasible. So the same thing should go for your soft tissue work. You should be able to execute soft tissue work on yourself and get results from it.
Thanks, John. That is super interesting. And I think throughout this stuff and everything that you've said so far, your experience with all of this stuff just really shines through. And kind of related to that, you've paired up with a fellow broken muscle contributor with a huge amount of experience, Callie Youngstrom, to create a hypertrophy and fat loss program. And I think we're okay to say that and say that it's not quite been released yet, but it's going to be available soon. Could you give us a sneak preview and tell us a little bit about what to expect in this program?
This program is something that I am super excited about. I'm as excited about the release of this program as I've ever been with anything in my entire career. So we're going to be bringing the best from strength and conditioning, hypertrophy training, prehabilitation, and meshing it with the best in nutrition. So we're bringing the yin and the yang together on this thing and really looking at programming as an entire unit. So we're not leaving any stone unturned on this thing. So people are going to be able to train under highly individualized programming and also do so in a setting where they're going to be held accountable and have the access to great coaches on a daily basis. So this is something that is going to blow people away when they get into this type of coaching, because it's really like unlike anything I've ever had the pleasure of working with before.
Nice. So who would you say that the program is going to be for, and what is the main benefit they're going to get from participating in it?
So if you want to look better, whether that's putting on a little bit of muscle armor or it's losing a little bit of that body fat before summer hits, this program's for you. If you want to feel better and if you want to make some gains in the way that you're functioning, this program is also for you. Kind of like the way that we talked about the all-inclusive programming, that's really my passion. That's what's going to be tapered to this program. We're going to be looking at high-performance, pain-free training for the long run that's going to be yielding some serious results.
Nice. And then is the training and nutrition applicable for both men and women, and will there be a difference at all for men and women?
Oh, yeah, we got this covered. You know, the difference between training for men and women, it's a little bit more simplistic than people make it out to be. So we're going to be not only looking at gender, but we're also going to be looking at people's individual goals. And the goals are above and beyond more important than any gender restriction. So people are going to be able to get into this program, look at their specific goals, and meet their goals with the best information that is currently available today in our industry.
Nice. Well, that sounds good to me. For everybody listening, for everybody listening out there, we'll have more specifics on this coming up. We'll be posting it on our site, including it in the show notes as well. But we wanted you to hear a little bit about it before the official announcement, straight from John's mouth. So thank you, John, for sharing about that.
Oh yeah, my pleasure.
So I think we're going to wrap up for today. So thank you for being here with us, and we really appreciate you taking the time to chat with us about this. I think it's really great to hear your perspective and learning how you came to your perspective and just thinking about long-term training, because I think a lot of our readers, one way or another, have come to the place where they have actually started to prioritize their long-term training.
Yes, yes. It's been great, and, you know, it's always a process, so. As long as we're working towards specific goals, people are going to be in good hands.
Absolutely. And thank you, John, from me also. Do you have any websites or seminars or anything really coming up that people can get back in contact with you, learn more from you, that you can mention right here? Feel free to do so just now.
So our big hub is our website, drjohnrusin.com, drjohnrusin.com. So that's going to have links to everything else, but our Facebook is John Russin Fitness Systems, and also our Twitter is handle John Russin, JOHNRUSIN.
Thank you, and from Breaking Muscle Radio to all of you, thanks for joining us for today's episode, and we hope to have you back for many more to come.